What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Well, after languishing in detention for 2 years, the Apostle Paul wondered if his situation would ever change anytime soon. But then his environment changed, and that brought about 4 consecutive changes. But even though things were happening quickly, Paul was ready to seize the opportunities before him. Now, you will recall in yesterday's program, we learned that there was a change of command. Then there was a change of the court. And in just a moment, Kenneth reflects on 2 other events that impacted Paul with part 2 of the program titled, Next Change.
Hi there, everyone. It's good to be with you. We've been considering a series of changes that Paul had experienced. When they all came in a cluster, one followed closely by another in Acts chapter 25. We considered yesterday in part 1, first of all, a change of command when the Roman governorship changed from Felix to Festus. And then secondly, there was a change of court when he appeared before the governor Felix in the presence of his accusers from Jerusalem. I want next to talk about a change of course. And in this, we will examine deeper and further some of the inward considerations surrounding that great, sudden, and unexpected move by Paul to appeal to Caesar, the highest court of appeal in the entire Roman Empire. That was a masterstroke which surprised and silenced everyone. Let's read on from where we stopped. Acts chapter 25, verse 12. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "You have appealed to Caesar? To Caesar you shall go." From all outward appearances, Paul was certainly the prisoner. But as it turned out, we see that Paul the prisoner was really the one who had real command and control. He was the one who had the power to turn the tables and to change the course of events. Festus, who was supposedly sitting as judge in the trial, found himself caught off guard and unprepared for Paul's bold and unexpected move. It really left him no choice but to submit to the imperial channel and process of appeal. He had to do this as honorably and in as dignified a manner as possible, without appearing to lose control or to lose face. This was beginning to look like a bad dream to commence his new governorship in Caesarea with. Well, at least his one consolation was that it disposed of a troublesome case for him, which wasn't his to begin with. He inherited this case, and it's just as well that it's taken out of the way and out of his hands right at the onset of his governorship. But on the other hand, all that has happened did not reflect too well on his capability to resolve local issues at his level. Just imagine what Caesar might think of his newly appointed governor in this province, sending up an appeal all the way up to Caesar's court with his first report of what he had just done. That's not a very auspicious or promising start. Well, in verse 12, we have a really curt conclusion to the court trial by the judge Festus. "You have appealed to Caesar you shall go." We can almost detect in that exclamation both a sense of indignation as well as resignation. If that's what you want, that's what you'll get. You asked for it. Almost insinuating you'll be sorry for it. But in truth, there was really nothing that he could practically do. It was really a lose-lose situation, both for Festus as well as for the Jews. They lost their political football, and Paul came out as the big winner. Now at last, after 2 years of waiting and detention without trial, with nothing much that seems to be happening day after day, week after week, At last, something has changed. And what a change it was. It was a big change, spelt in capital letters. In coming aside to consider what prompted Paul to make this move, one is prompted to ask this question. Was this an impulsive or preemptive move on Paul's part? Was he really pushed into a corner so that he had little choice but to take this as a last resort? Or was he just holding back his last trump card till now? Those are all terms and expressions and phrases that speak of man's devising and scheming and planning. But surely this was not the way Paul moved. He moved by faith. He moved in God's will. And he moved in step with the Spirit. The choice made here was not just a matter of choosing between trusting in God or appealing to man. It was a very pragmatic and practical choice that he had to make. It was between two earthly powers, the civil authority of the Roman Court of Justice or the religious enmity of the Jewish Sanhedrin or Council in Jerusalem. He was not choosing the lesser of two evils, as much as he was choosing the higher of two earthly authorities, both of which were ultimately still under God's sovereign authority. For this is what Paul himself says in his Roman epistle, chapter 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. In those days, throughout all parts of the empire, there was corruption, conspiracy, and greed at all levels. All these were quite rampant, even among local rulers and governors, amongst the elders and the priests, amongst rebels as well as robbers. The rule of Roman law, therefore, represented more hope of justice than the traditional systems of justice meted out locally. History tells us that even the Jewish leaders themselves went to Rome to accuse the previous governor, Felix, before Nero, who was the emperor at that time. Evidently, Felix had grown extremely unpopular with many of the Jews, which was perhaps the reason why he had been replaced by the new governor, Festus. The point of this is to realize that it wasn't so uncommon for delegations or individuals to appeal to Rome or to Caesar when there were strongly felt grievances that have been unresolved at the provincial level. And perhaps Paul might have been influenced by this recent happening not so long ago. If the Jews themselves went to Rome against their governor Felix, it was no big thing for him to appeal to Caesar and to go to Rome as well. After all, he had nothing to lose in getting out of Caesarea where he had spent 2 years in detention instead of continuing there indefinitely. But Paul's attitude was neither defiant nor deferential. In his decisive appeal, he wasn't really wanting to put down Festus, nor was he deferring to Caesar's higher powers. But he was guided, as always, in all his actions and decisions by what the Lord was leading him to. He could and would only take this course of action if it was absolutely clear to him that this was the Lord's doing. And hence, there was no fear of man or of earthly powers when he made his appeal and his decision, because it was made in the will of the Lord. The final factor that leads a man to decide on a momentous course of action is often invisible and inscrutable to others. They are known only to God and to the man himself. Others may see the effects, the fallout, but they do not know or see or understand the factors or the feelings that led to it behind the scenes. And even if they were given a glimpse of it, it would be inscrutable to them. they would not be able to appreciate or to understand the things of the Spirit and the mind of God unless they have that same mind and spirit. The full and final explanation always has to be God's ordering and providence. Now note that there was no time out for Paul in that situation to go and seek God's mind in prayer or fasting over a protracted period. There was just a split-second window of opportunity for him to seize the moment and strike or lose it altogether. So this kind of response and reaction has to come from living, moving, and having our being in God's will all the time. It's when we are in God's will continually that we are enabled in such a time as this to do what is God's will instinctively. On a more human level, I suppose Paul could also have been influenced, perhaps unconsciously, by his long-standing desire to go to Rome. And yet for a man of God, all such desires are planted by the Lord, which invariably grows in his time. We first find this desire mentioned in Acts chapter 19, verse 21, when Paul was at Ephesus. When these things were accomplished, Paul purposed in the Spirit, when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, to go to Jerusalem, saying, "After I have been there, I must also see Rome." If something is of God, it will not be the first and the last time. And once again, we find this desire and aspiration to go to Rome surfacing again in Acts chapter 23, verse 11. But this time as a confirmation from God. But following the night, the Lord stood by him, that is Paul, and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome." I want you to notice the use of the imperative word must in both instances. Paul said, "I must also see Rome." And the Lord also said, "You must also bear witness at Rome." This clearly expresses the imperative of both his desire, which was planted by God, confirmed by God's revelation and exhortation to him. So it wasn't just an impulsive, knee-jerk reaction that he made in the court of Festus on that day. It wasn't unusual for people from all over the empire to make their way to Rome, either to settle down in search of a better life, or to present a petition, or when summoned by the imperial authorities. But for Paul, this was the outworking of a call to witness at Rome also, just as the Lord had revealed to him, and not just a wish to see Rome. It wasn't just something nice to have, it was something he must have. God often works through such a complementary combination of his word of revelation and instruction and our desire. And when these two come together, they open the way for the fulfillment of God's will in our lives. Things begin to fall into place so fittingly that it is instantly recognizable to the inward eye of faith that this is of God and it is the Lord's doing. So that led to a major change of course for Paul from this point onward. This leads us to the last change, which I shall simply call a change of counsel, referring not so much to the court of trial for judgment, but rather an audience, and this happened with King Agrippa II and Bernice, who paid a courtesy call to the new governor Festus in Caesarea. And we read of this from verse 13 through to 22 in Acts chapter 25. The Jewish historian Josephus tells us that Bernice was actually Agrippa's elder sister, while his younger sister, called Drusilla, had married Felix, the previous governor. And Drusilla is mentioned with Felix in Acts chapter 24, verse 24. So King Agrippa II was quite well connected with Rome. This official visit and courtesy call by King Agrippa II with Bernice afforded Festus a sort of second opinion of what had happened in his preliminary hearing. Let's read from verse 13. And after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a certain man left a prisoner by Felix, about whom the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, when I was in Jerusalem, asking for a judgment against him. To them I answered, 'It is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him.' Therefore, when they had come together, without any delay, the next day I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in. When the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I supposed, but had some questions against him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus who had died, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I was uncertain of such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved for the decision of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I could send him to Caesar." That long and somewhat detailed recollection and explanation of what had transpired by Festus to Agrippa was perhaps a reflection of his anxiety to put things right and to set himself straight, at least in the eyes of his peers and superiors. The reference to being reserved for the decision of Augustus, mentioned in verse 21, is a reference to Augustus as the title for Caesar and not his personal name, because Nero was by then the Caesar. Verse 22, "Then Agrippa said to Festus, 'I also would like to hear the man myself.' 'Tomorrow,' he said, 'you shall hear him.'" That's a right and reasonable request by Agrippa to hear Paul for himself. And it should be so with any witness of Jesus Christ to anyone else. You will want to read, hear, or judge for yourself, and not just from hearsay, but firsthand. But the problem with many is putting off hearing the Lord till tomorrow, as in verse 22, "Tomorrow you shall hear him." One can defer and procrastinate indefinitely to the point that you never get round to doing it, even if it is a most important matter of life and death. Where God's word and salvation is concerned, the operative word you must remember is today, not tomorrow, because it may never come. Today is the day of salvation. "Today you will be with me in paradise," Jesus said to one of the thieves crucified with him. "Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts." That was the same fatal mistake that Felix made before him. In Acts chapter 24, verse 25, after calling Paul up and hearing him for a couple of times, he said, "Go away for now. When I have a convenient time, I will call for you." This is the sort of callous notion of a Christ at our convenience, at our beck and call, that many people have. I will just pass over the intervening testimony of Paul before King Agrippa, which goes right on into the next chapter 26. This is now the third high-level testimony that he made before governors and kings. And in chapter 26, in the last two verses, in verses 31 and 32, we have the summary statement of King Agrippa after his audience with Paul. "And when they had gone aside, they talked among themselves, saying, 'This man is doing nothing deserving of death or chains.' Then Agrippa said to Festus, 'This man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar.'" Oh, that might have stirred some misgivings on the part of Festus, but certainly not of Paul. Our decisions will always be tested when something like this comes up soon after to provoke doubt and regret. So beware of suggestions and opinions which are not necessarily spiritual facts. In taking a step of faith in God, there is no "if only" when we look back. There is no regret. There is also no "what if" as we face the future. There should be no anxiety. There are no ifs and buts in the will of God. Paul's great aim was not just to be free from imprisonment or detention, but to do God's will and to be where God sends him to. For Paul, it was God's provision of a free ticket and passage to Rome, complete with a full security escort. Josephus the historian tells us that Festus died just only 2 years later in AD 62, by which time Paul was already in Rome, by the will of God. Whatever changes you might be going through, may the Lord refresh you through His presence and reach you through His word.
Our decisions will always be tested when changes come soon after to provoke doubt and regret. But if God is for us, who can be against us? Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again next time when Ken leads us into another reflection on God's Word. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.